and from there to being virtually certainly correct. Even so, with the structure of DNA understood, progress in genetics was swift, and by 1968 the journal Science could run an article titled, "That was the molecular biology that was," suggesting, it hardly seems possible, but it is so, that the work of genetics was nearly at an end. In fact, of course, it was only just beginning. Even now, there is a great deal about DNA that we scarcely understand, not least why so much of it doesn't actually seem to do anything. 97% of your DNA consists of nothing but long stretches of meaningless garble, junk, or non-coding DNA, as biochemists prefer to put it. Only here and there along each strand do you find sections that control and organize vital functions. These are the curious and long elusive genes. Genes are nothing more nor less than instructions to make proteins. This they do with a certain dull fidelity. In this sense, they are rather like the keys of a piano, each playing a single note and nothing else, which is obviously a trifle monotonous. But combine the genes as you would combine piano keys, and you can create chords and melodies of infinite variety. Put all these genes together, and you have, to continue the metaphor, the great symphony of existence known as the human genome. An alternative and more common way to regard the genome is as a kind of instruction manual for the body. Viewed this way, the chromosomes can be imagined as the book's chapters, and the genes as individual instructions for making proteins. The words in which the instructions are written are called codons, and the letters are known as bases. The bases, the letters of the genetic alphabet, consist of the four nucleotides mentioned a page or two back, adenine, thymine, guanine, and cytosine. Despite the importance of what they do, these substances are not made of anything exotic. Guanine, for instance, is the same stuff that abounds in, and gives its name to, guano. The shape of a DNA molecule, as everyone knows, is rather like a spiral staircase or twisted rope ladder, the famous double helix. The uprights of this structure are made of a type of sugar called deoxyribose, and the whole of the helix is a nucleic acid, hence the name deoxyribonucleic acid. The rungs, or steps, are formed by two bases joining across the space between, and they can combine in only two ways. Guanine is always paired with cytosine, and thymine always with adenine. The order in which these letters appear as you move up or down the ladder constitutes the DNA code. Logging it has been the job of the Human Genome Project. Now, the particular brilliance of DNA lies in its manner of replication. When it is time to produce a new DNA molecule, the two strands part down the middle, like the zipper on a jacket, and each half goes off to form a new partnership. Because each nucleotide along a strand pairs up with a specific other nucleotide, each strand serves as a template for the creation of a new matching strand. If you possessed just one strand of your own DNA, you could easily enough reconstruct the matching side by working out the necessary partnerships. If the topmost rung on one strand was made of guanine, then you would know that the topmost rung on the matching strand must be cytosine. Work your way down the ladder through all the nucleotide pairings, and eventually you would have the code for a new molecule. That is just what happens in nature. Except that nature does it really quickly, in only a matter of seconds, which is quite a feat. Most of the time, our DNA replicates with dutiful accuracy. But just occasionally, about one time in a million, a letter gets into the wrong place. This is known as a single nucleotide polymorphism, or SNP, familiarly known to biochemists as a SNP. Generally, these SNPs are buried in stretches of non-coding DNA and have no detectable consequence for the body, but occasionally they make a difference. They might leave you predisposed to some disease, but equally they might confer some slight advantage, more protective pigmentation, for instance, or increased production of red blood cells for someone living at altitude. Over time, these slight modifications accumulate in both individuals and in populations, contributing to the distinctiveness of both. The balance between accuracy and errors in replication is a fine one. Too many errors, and the organism can't function. But too few, and it sacrifices adaptability. A similar balance must exist between stability in an organism and innovation. An increase in red blood cells can help a person or group living at high elevations to move and breathe more easily because more red cells can carry more oxygen. But additional red cells also thicken the blood. Add too many and it's like pumping oil, in the words of Temple University anthropologist Charles Weitz. That's hard on the heart. Thus, those designed to live at high altitude get increased breathing efficiency, but pay for it with higher risk hearts. By such means does Darwinian natural selection look after us. It also helps to explain why we are all so similar. Evolution simply won't let you become too different, not without becoming a new species anyway. The 0.1% difference between your genes and mine is accounted for by our SNPs. Now, if you compared your DNA with a third person's, there would also be a 99.9% correspondence, but the SNPs would, for the most part, be in different places. Add more people to the comparison, and you will get yet more SNPs in yet more places. For every one of your 3.2 billion bases, somewhere on the planet, there will be a person or group of persons with different coding in that position. So not only is it wrong to refer to the human genome, but in a sense, we don't even have a human genome. We have 6 billion of them. We are all 99.9% the same, but equally, in the words of the biochemist David Cox, you could say all humans share nothing, and that would be correct too. But we have still to explain why so little of that DNA has any discernible purpose. It starts to get a little unnerving, but it does really seem that the purpose of life is to perpetuate DNA. The 97% of our DNA commonly called junk is largely made up of clumps of letters that, in Ridley's words, exist for the pure and simple reason that they are good at getting themselves duplicated. Junk DNA does have a use.